This is Pat Loika, and you're listening to Loika Mania. How's it going, everyone? This is Pat Loika, and you're listening to Loika Mania, episode 35. And I am joined by my co-host once again for this week, Mr. Adam Witt. How's it going, Adam?
It's going good, Pat. How are you?
Not too bad. Adam is here for a very special occasion once again, like last week. But we'll be joined by a third person shortly, a different person, though, from last week. And that is a Mr. Jonathan Hickman. Jonathan Hickman, of course, is the writer of FF, formerly known as Fantastic Four. He also writes Secret Warriors for Marvel, and he is the creator of such books as Pax Romana, The Nightly News, Transhuman, and Red Mask for Mars for Image, with The Red Wing coming up in a few months. And I'm really looking forward to the talk. How did you hear about John Hickman, Adam?
One of my friends bought me The Nightly News at random. And just put it in my hands and said, you know, that I think it was a Christmas gift, and said that, you know, this is the sort of thing that I think you'd enjoy. And it totally was. And it made me check out a bunch of his Marvel stuff. I'm a big Fantastic Four fan as it is. So seeing that he was going to write it, I was like, oh, this should be cool. And all the way through it has been. So,
yeah, his work has really caught my eye. He's a very big, he's really big on high concepts, which I love, and he is also he has a talent for long form stories, as seen in his FF and his Secret Warrior stuff, where he really likes to seed a lot of stuff earlier in the book. He likes to do like these little scenes that seem kind of inconsequential, and then when you get to the point where he starts revealing everything, they just play out, and it's really special. I've heard of John, you know, after Nightly News, and I always thought that this guy was destined to go places. And now, less than 5 years since then, he's already one of the top dogs in Marvel. He's an architect, so
writing three books.
Yeah, he's writing three books, and he's basically, you know, he went from little obscurity, and within 5 years, he just became one of the biggest stars that Marvel has, and one of the biggest stars in comics. Really, He's definitely one of those people.
Yeah, he's catching a bunch of eyes, and with good reason. I mean, he is, you know, Nightly News and Pax Romana were doing things with comics that most people hadn't seen up to that point. It was really, you know, the combination of design and story, you know, implementing design into story, things like that, where it just wasn't happening that way for the most part. And he came in and just kind of blew the doors off.
Yeah, and his graphic design background really helped him kind of get his own identity. Like, basically, his stuff, his name is like a brand. Because you see if you see all the, you know, the trades that he put out through Image, they all have the similar trade dress, similar design sense, and you could tell, okay, these are Hickman's books.
Yeah, and he kind of took that sensibility over to Marvel.
His FF trades are all, they all have the same designs. Like, if you see them lined up next to each other, like, you know, you look at the spines of the books, like, okay, those are Hickman's books.
That is, yeah.
You could tell. Yeah, and he's a very cool guy. I met him on several occasions at cons, and he's very gracious to offer up some of his time here today to chat with us. So, in a few seconds, you'll listen to us talk to Mr. Hickman. And we are back, and right now we are joined by Jonathan Hickman, writer of FF and S.H.I.E.L.D. and Secret Warriors for Marvel, and the upcoming The Red Wing for Image. Thanks for joining us, John.
Happy to be here, man.
Awesome. Been a big fan of your work for quite a while now, and it's pretty amazing to think that you really broke into the biz about 5 years ago with Nightly News, and I also know that you came from a graphic design background. I was kind of wondering what drove you from from graphic design and leaving that industry behind and doing comics instead.
Oh, well, I was an art director at an ad agency whenever I pretty much called all that quits. And advertising is terrible work, and it's soul-sucking, and I was happy to be rid of it. Beyond that, I'd always wanted to do comics, and when I sent in my submission for Nightly News to Image, and they said they would publish it, it was not a difficult decision to kind of change my life.
That's excellent. And before that, though, I mean, you were part of the CBR had this competition called Comic Book Idol, and you participated in that. And
yeah, well, that was me still thinking that I was gonna be in comics if I tried hard enough to be an artist. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was an art competition. Mm-hmm. And the sad reality is that I wasn't. But what happened is that just kind of got the juices flowing, and then so I tried to hook up with some other writers to start to produce my own material, because I wasn't going to start working at Marvel or DC or even working with a good writer at Image right off the bat. And what I found was that all the scripts that I was getting, this is a nice way to put this, were not as good as what I felt I could come up with myself. And so I went to Robert McKee story about mm-hmm. Robert McKee. I went to a Robert McKee seminar, and I called my wife and told her that I thought that I could do this math. And I went home and did my 5 pages for my submission to Image for Nightly News, and the rest is a decent story.
Speaking as someone who, you're talking about that your art wasn't up to the par that you wanted it to be, how much of your art is digital versus being on paper? How much of it do you do in the different mediums?
I cross-pollinate pretty heavily. Nightly News, for example, was a lot of raw files that were analog, brush and pen. And then I would scan it in and convert it to, like, vector files. And then I would finish everything in Illustrator and Adobe Illustrator. And then I would import all of that into Photoshop, because it was resolution independent, I could play with page layouts, and that's really, if you look at Nightly News, that's really what it is. It's a design experiment plus narrative, kind of certainly not my best storytelling by any stretch of the imagination, but as an experiment, I think it works.
And how much when you're finally sitting down to write a script, what part of your brain comes in first? Do you think more of the design element of it, or do you think does the writer side of you take over straight away?
Well, I see what's going to be on the page. Now, obviously, I don't get that whenever I don't draw it. I mean, there are certain artists that I work with where the transition is pretty seamless. For example, Steve Apting converts what I write into a pretty close approximation of what I see in my head. Him more than anyone else at this point. Dustin Weaver on S.H.I.E.L.D. Takes things in a completely different direction than what's in my head, but it's always cooler than what's in my head as far as Dustin goes. And then the other guys are less or more back and forth to different degrees. But I'm a very visual writer. I'm not sure if that answers your question, but I certainly see the page finished in my head. I design-wise, I don't. I treat my creator-owned work that I'm writing and drawing completely different than I do anything that I'm writing for anyone else. Like I don't even care about the script to a certain extent. Whenever I'm writing stuff in my head for me to draw, because I already know all the beats that I want to hit and all that, and I know that the words will come as part of the design process. It's completely different whenever you're working like Marvel, where you're a piece of an assembly line process. You not only don't have that luxury, you don't have the time to work in that repetitive manner also. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
And you did mention that you pitched to Image earlier. How's the pitching process like for them compared to pitching with Marvel, for example? Because you put out work for both, and I've always been curious how one compares to the other. I mean, granted, you're working with your own characters with Image, and Marvel is a completely different story. But what is there some kind of criteria that they look for, something that they look for in every pitch from either side that makes it easier or more difficult for you?
Yeah, it's completely different. After the nightly news, pitching at Image got very, very easy in that they just wanted me to do more work. And as long as it wasn't, I care too much about comics, and I have waited too long to do this to ever be arrogant enough to fuck with publishers or readers. I mean, I would never do that. So they know that I take it pretty seriously as far as I'm not going to just do stuff to see how far I can get away with bad behavior. I mean, that's juvenile, and I just would never do that. So knowing that they can trust me in that manner, pitching at Image is pretty straightforward. It's more along the lines of, I would like to do a book about this, and we would like for it to come out here, and let's rock and roll. At this point at Image, it's pretty simple at this point. But as far as my initial pitch to Image, I did what they tell you to do. I did 5 pages of consecutive story. I had a synopsis and I had a cover letter, and I didn't do anything else. And I encourage everyone that's submitting stuff to Image, never do more than that. There are like 50 different reasons why you should never do more than that. The best of which is, in the time it takes you to produce a 20-page comic, you can do 4 pitches for four or five page pitches for four different books, and you have a much better shot of one of them getting picked up than just if you put everything into one pitch. It's just not smart. So I just followed the instructions. And I don't know, did you guys read was it today? Did you guys read the CBR interview that Stevenson did today?
I don't think I have. I haven't gotten a chance to look yet, but if there is one, I would definitely read it.
Yeah, he talks about how poor a lot of the submissions they get are. Like, just absolutely horrific. So when you send in a good pitch to Image, it really stands out. And if you send in several of those, I would think you would be increasing your chances exponentially. So, pitching at Image is not difficult if you follow the instructions and have some, personal integrity, and if you're committed to telling good stories and you are able to critically look at your work and the people that you're collaborating with, if you are collaborating with anyone, and you should be in pretty good shape. Now, pitching at Marvel is a completely different animal. That's what you're there. I mean, if you're not at Marvel, if they're asking to pitch something and you're not actually currently a Marvel writer under contract, and they literally owe you work to fulfill their end of the contract, if you're pitching cold, they're just looking for different, and they have to ask you to pitch. I mean, you can't really write pitches
That's right.
for Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
But if they ask you, if you've done a book at Image or at one of the other smaller houses, and they ask you to pitch a story, remember that they ask you to pitch a story because they feel like you have a unique and interesting voice, and so don't try and do anything more than write. And you're never going to get like a, you're not going to get a 6-issue miniseries when you pitch something out of the gate as a raw writer at Marvel, they're going to ask you to do an 8-page story. So the best thing you can do is write you know, a great 8-page story, and they're going to ask you to write another one, write another great one, and then you'll get a couple of issues. And then at some point down the line, then you start pitching series. And when you do that, they're looking for a unique take on characters. They're not looking for writers for X-Men or Avengers. Those jobs are taken. They want you to do something like, you know, like what Maddie did with Punisher or Iron Fist or what, you know, what I did with a book like Secret Warriors or something like that. They want you to take, or what Chris did with Avengers Academy. You know, they want you to take, you know, new properties or obscure properties and find a way, you know, to make those things interesting, and pitching those things is difficult sometimes because they ask you to do a lot of rewrites, and what you don't know at the time is that they're looking for specific takes on specific characters. You know, and there are always other concerns. You know, are you creating new characters in your pitch? If you're creating new characters, would it fall under the X franchise, and they're not going to want to create new characters for something that some other movie studio is going to have the rights to? I mean, all of that stuff is being taken into consideration when you pitch at Marvel, and you kind of it's really inside baseball. But again, that's inside baseball, and at least you're playing baseball at that point, right?
Yeah.
When it comes down to the collaborative process, you've done different books. You know, you started off on your own, and then you were doing things with different guys at Marvel and different guys with your Image stuff. How close of a role do you take in the collaborative process between those two?
I'm not sure what you're asking.
How closely do you work with the artists? Is more what I mean.
Well, it depends. Sometimes you're working with artists that don't speak English. At that point, physical relationship is all that you have. They're a sea away, and so there's not much there. I would say that it really depends. It really depends on the receptiveness of the artist. It depends on, I guess, kind of how much weight you're pulling and that kind of stuff. I personally have a tendency to be a real dick when it comes to design stuff and how the book should look. And I know that I'm difficult whenever it comes to that kind of stuff. And I know that I'm a bit of a pain in the ass. Saying that, I think my trades look better than a bunch of the other Marvel trades, and that's no disrespect to the people in the trade department, but they're producing a ton of them, and certainly the Secret Warriors and FF trades are unique looking, and you know, and actually off that style, they just produced the Shield hardcover, and I think it came out pretty good. I actually did not do that, and I think they kind of riffed off my other designs and came up with something that's pretty strong. But you know, I'm big on the design of the book, and so sometimes I exceed what is maybe the comfort region of some artists. But on the flip side of that, I know because I'm really visual and because I know how to actually physically produce a comic in a really down to the minutia. I also lay artists up in a lot of ways. Like we were crunching on FF here, and I gave Steve Epting a bunch of pages that were really easy work for an artist, and he knew it, and I knew it, and the editors knew it. But the book looks great, and it's not a cheat, and it worked within the story and all that kind of stuff. But we made deadline, and I made him money, and I made it easier for him. And
I think that earns you a little bit more rope. And in my case, hopefully it balances out me being an ass about the other stuff.
With regards to we're kind of on the design aspect right now, which is something we wanted to touch upon anyway. What I love about your work, particularly your image work, is that when you go to a bookstore or I look on my bookshelf right now, I see four Jonathan Hickman trades, and I can tell it's a Jonathan Hickman section because they have the same design elements. And
sure.
I always wondered, I always thought that design, as far as publication design anyway, was something that not many people are really paying attention to. I mean, you're trying to get this in the hands of as many people as possible. You want to try and catch their eyes, and a good way to do that is by, of course, by effective design. And, for example, your image trades, they stand out because they have that stripe thing going on the side, on the spines of the books, and your Fantastic Four hardcovers and trades have, the headshots on the spine, and mm-hmm. and the colors stand out, unlike most Marvel hardcovers, where it's just, the black and gold spines, for example. I always wondered, when you do these, is this part of, say, what the publishers, pay you for? Do you get anything extra for that, or is it just something you do just because like you mentioned earlier, you want your books to look really good and you're just going that extra step?
Well, in my image work, I own all of it. So it's in my own best interest, and I get all of the money. Mm-hmm. So it's in my best interest for them to sell well. Mm-hmm. And the reality is that we're selling so many trades that spine design is actually almost as important as cover design. A lot of people miss that. And so that's the reason why those things have got those stripy spines and they stick out on the shelf pretty like a sore thumb.
Yeah, they stand out, and it's really effective,
Yeah, well, that's kind of the point. As far as Marvel, do I get paid extra? I think I do. I think I do.
You should.
I do. I can't remember. I'll tell you how it went. The first conversation that I ever had about my trades, I was, I don't know. It may have started with a logo design because I wasn't happy with the logo. I don't remember. But at some point, the conversation went like this. I don't like this, and I want to do something different. And they were like, "Well, I'm sorry, but we've already paid somebody else to do it." And I say, "I don't care about the money. I care about the book looking good," which is a stupid thing to say if you're in it for the money. And we certainly at Matt Marvel, you're working for a corporation. You don't own anything. You should get paid for everything that you do. However, I would argue. Quality transcends getting paid in mm-hmm. certain instances, and I think this is one of them. And I'm pretty sure I get paid for trade design and all that kind of stuff, but at the end of the day, I want a glorious-looking Secret Warriors omnibus or Fantastic Four omnibus or oversized hardcovers or the hardcovers or whatever. I want those things to look great because my job is actually to produce quality content. And so so I lose $300. I make it up on selling more trades. It doesn't matter. I mean, that's a wash in my opinion. I should not only do those things and get paid for them, but they should be done for everyone, and we should be highly interested in great looking books.
And I noticed a trend, though, Secret Warriors was probably your first Marvel collection that was put out. And
sure.
The first hardcover release. And I always thought that ever since then, they've slowly been improving as far as the designs go. Like they were kind of straying away from the gold and black spines, and they've been adding mm-hmm. more color, and they've been doing more things. So I thought that was a really nice step towards a different direction. And as far as...
Well, Pat, in all fairness, those guys, the trade department at Marvel is not huge. Mm-hmm. It's not like they have a factory of 40 people cranking out books. And the reality is that Marvel puts out a metric shit ton of books every month.
Oh, I know. I know.
We put out a ton of product. Mm-hmm. And at some point it becomes get it done because it has to go to press. Mm-hmm. And you can't you can't get upset at Laverne and Shirley if they don't polish every glass on the assembly line, you know? I mean, it's just, you can't. And so I think on the products that they care a lot about, the Marvel designers do a great job on the products that they have to get out. They get out on time. I mean, Marvel is an efficient organization, and I do think they deserve credit for getting out what they do get out, man. It's the number of pieces that we have to juggle every month to get all the books out that we do is it's staggering. So, I'm sorry, you were getting ready to ask another question.
No, I was gonna say though, really nothing bad about them. I just thought that ever since you started doing, ever since your first book, I noticed, you know, that they've been kind of going in a different direction with the trades, and they've been doing better designs, like putting more stuff on the spines, for example. So I thought I thought you might have been a good influence on them as far as the design goes. And
I don't know. I think I'm a horrible influence. I have no idea. So. They're good people, though. Good people.
Yeah.
Was your decision to have everything kind of look uniform with your stories influenced by the novel market at all? Because when you go and you see something like that by a certain author, a lot of them have similar trade designs and things that really just kind of blow off the shelf. Did any of your impetus come from there, or was it just an instinctive thing?
I think families of things should look like families of things.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think there's so much noise on the bookshelf. I'll give you a perfect example. We do a lot of fantastic cover art at Marvel. I mean, we have some of the best cover artists. I mean, if you look at Marco, the list is, you look at Assad's covers on X-Force. I mean, we have fantastic cover artists at Marvel. However, if you go to the comics store and you look at the wall of comics, it almost becomes a bit of visual noise because they're all so bright, or they're all so, you understand what I'm saying?
I mean, yeah, absolutely.
It becomes visual noise, so that when you do a cover that's just white, you know, with the word Batman on it, that shit's effective, right? Because it stands out. And in that same instance, kind of school of thought, if you have 20 or 30 trades, and then you have a block of seven that look, you know, like they belong together, it'll catch your eye. Perfect examples of this: the Queen and Country trades out of Oni are a great example of that. There are tons of examples, but anyway, that's a perfect example. They're not even the same color, but you know they belong together.
And moving on past the design stuff. What I liked about a lot of your work is that you always seem to have a theme. There seems to be like an underlying theme in pretty much all of your work, and a lot of them tend to be towards the improvement or the betterment of humanity or whatever institution that you were talking about. I always wondered what's your inspiration behind most of these? Like, for example, Nightly News, of course, is about, you know, the institutions around us, the press and all that. And then you have Pax Romana, which is about the church and their way of trying to improve themselves. I was just curious as to what inspires you with regards to these themes that you have with your comics.
Well, I would say that Nightly News is its own animal, clearly a cry for attention, and me just trying to generate visual and just as much loud noise as possible. You know, look at me, I want to do this for the rest of my life, and in that instance, it was a success. I think that you can look at S.H.I.E.L.D. and Fantastic Four and Pax Romana and Secret Warriors and I guess Transhuman and maybe Red Mask. All of these are thematically stories about society. I mean, all those books are about society at large or in the macro or in the micro, like Fantastic Four is about family in society and whereas Pax Romana is as, and S.H.I.E.L.D. are as wide and as big as you can get about that. And it's progress of those institutions. I'm moving on from that. The next bunch of books that I'm doing are not as much about that. What's the best way to say this? I've only been doing this for 4 years. Mm-hmm. A little over 4 years now, or has it mm-hmm. even been? Yeah, a little over 4 years. Mm-hmm. And so that was kind of where I was at, and now I'm in a different place, and I'm starting to write about different things. And that's just the nature of writing a bunch of stuff in a compressed period of time. And I think the next stuff that I'm doing, it's a little bit. A little bit different. Still some time travel and whatnot because I just like that as a story device. But I think a lot of that, you're right, thematically those kind of go together. But as we grow and evolve as individuals, we start talking about and doing different things. And that's kind of where I'm at. I'm getting ready to do a whole bunch of that stuff.
I'm looking forward to it. Speaking of what you're working on next, tell us a bit more about the Red Wing with Image, because it's been a while since we've had new creator-owned work from you. And it's first of all, I wanted to see, considering you've been with Marvel for a while, I was wondering, you know, why Image instead of Icon, for example. But you know, I was curious about that decision.
Well, I mean, some of that's just personal business stuff mm-hmm. as far as I'm not doing Icon right now, but it was offered to me, and it still is available to me, and I'm certainly very, very happy at Marvel, but now was kind of not the right time to do stuff over there. And in addition, I like putting books out at Image. I like working with Eric. I owe those guys my career, and so it's not with a or anything like that that I'm over there. I mean, I'm very excited to be at Image. I certainly don't look at it as better or worse or anything like that. I mean, we were on the cover of previews. That's not too shabby. So it's not like I'm not getting promoted or anything like that.
It looks like it's loyalty being rewarded. I mean, they've been loyal to you, and you're kind of being loyal to them also. And I think that's always a good thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's all good. I don't know how else to describe it without sounding like a idiot, but. Yeah, I'm Marvel's happy with me. I'm happy at Marvel. Image is happy with me. I'm happy to be doing this Image, and I don't know. We're all drinking beer and high fiving or something. I don't know.
Awesome. So, as far as the concept of the Red Wing goes, if you can tell us a little bit more about it.
Vomit in your mouth. Hollywood high concept pitches. It's like Top Gun meets time travel. so it offers up a lot of very cool visuals as well as really interesting kind of dynamics. I don't know, who doesn't want to watch dogfights through time? That sounds cool.
Yeah, that sounds awesome.
Yeah. So, but against that backdrop, it's a story about. It's kind of a story about how if you aren't connected to your past, is that a liberating thing or is that a burden? And by that I mean Well, what happens in the story is they lose. There's a war kind of going on across different periods of time, and what happens is that they lose their past. I mean that somebody comes in and takes it over, and so they're a people with a future, but they have no point of reference from which, you know, what they remember is the past. It isn't actually the past, and so they don't actually have one. And so is that a liberating concept or is it a burden? And it's about some people that are proud of their past and some people that are not, and some people who want nothing more than to be free from it. You know, so it's high-minded bullshit with really cool Michael Bay spaceship time fighting, you know, battles, and together we hope to make something decent.
And it looks like it's illustrated by Nick Patara, who did some work with you recently in Shield Infinity. So
yeah.
I look forward to that. I think he's a really cool artist. Is this the first work he's ever done, or did you find him? Has he been around for a while?
Well, he did like Comic Book Idol like a couple years after I did.
Oh wow! Okay.
Yeah, and so that's how I met him. That's how I knew of him. But I've tried to get him on. He did that Bobby and Sam New Mutants story with me in Astonishing Tales. I don't know if you remember that.
That was a miniseries, right? I think I remember it, but I haven't read that in a while.
Yeah, I think the front story was Cebulski and Kenneth Rocafort.
Yes,
did a Wolverine Punisher thing, I think. But anyway. Yeah, he did that with me, and I tried to get him on some other books. He actually pitched for S.H.I.E.L.D. And did some really cool art for that book, but obviously we went with Dustin. But no, I've been trying to get him on some stuff, but we eventually decided, you know what, let's go do some creator-owned books, and so that's what we're doing now. He's fantastic. He really is. I'm very excited to... It's going to be interesting to see where he's at in a couple of years. I think he's very, very talented.
You also seem to bring out the best in a lot of your collaborators. I mean, you mentioned Dustin Weaver just recently, and I remember seeing his work on X-Books before he did S.H.I.E.L.D., and he was nowhere near the same level as where he was when he did S.H.I.E.L.D. number one and so on. I always thought, is it something that... I guess what I'm trying to say is, what do you do to get their artists to put out such amazing work? Is it something in your scripts, or is it like...
I think if Olivia Coipel and Jimmy Chung were to work with me, they'd find themselves exponentially better. I don't understand why they don't.
But yeah, I'm just saying that just an observation I had, because I've seen Dustin's work before, and I thought he was pretty good where he was, but then
the truth there, Pat, is he doesn't care about the X-Men.
Oh,
I mean, he doesn't care. No, I mean that's a lot of this stuff is you have to give you. Art is an inspirational exercise, and if the artist isn't inspired to do great work, guess what? It's going to suck. It's going to suck, man. And so if you're a writer and you give your artist something that they don't want to draw for 3 or 4 issues in a row, guess what? Your 3 or 4 issue series is going to be ass. and so, that is a pretty straightforward exercise. Are you, as a writer, self-absorbed and you only care about your art and not anybody else's? If you're coming from that place, go with God and best of luck and all that stuff, but you will fail, and you deserve to fail in a collaborative medium like comics. I'm just mindful of that, Pat. I don't think that... I am gracious and very thankful for where I'm at. I know I can be difficult, but I would never I would never extend my difficulties to other people in the sense that I would make them dread doing their job. The day that I do that, I hope they would call me on it. So.
And kind of focus on S.H.I.E.L.D. for a little bit since it's been brought up. First of all, it's one of the most – I can't believe it's something that hasn't been done before as far as Marvel goes. And reading it, though, it feels very much like it's a creator-owned book, even though it's something that's being published by Marvel and set in the Marvel universe. So I've been curious as to whether or not this was, you know, this was something that you always had in your head that you wanted to do, but decided to turn it into a Marvel pitch, or was this something that was sent that was given to you later on at Marvel?
Well, I had a S.H.I.E.L.D.-like story that. You know, I'd wanted to do as an indie book. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's one of those happy coincidences where I walked into Marvel one day and Nick Lowe asked me if I had a Leonardo da Vinci pitch. I did. and then through the collaborative effort of editorial and creative and myself, we all collectively came up with something that is kind of special. My creator own pitch for it was nowhere near as I think about it like this. If I had only held on to it as a creator-owned thing and had not given my portion of it to Marvel, and together we came up with this really cool thing, sure, at some point in the future I may have been able to do it by myself, but would I have had Dustin Weaver illustrating it? No. Would it have had Galactus in it? No. I'm a big believer in the fact that it was a truth that I'm not going to retire at Marvel, and therefore I have to generate creator-owned properties, not only as a artistically liberating exercise away from the grind that is monthly corporate comics, serialized comics. And you know, needing a retirement program and needing, just investing in myself. That's what creator-owned comics are. But, you know, from time to time, there is a perfect place to to give up some of the stuff that you've created on your own. And make a special new thing in a corporate environment, and S.H.I.E.L.D. is a perfect example of that. I also think you can't be overly precious about your ideas. I think when you start treating one idea as like, oh, I've got the perfect idea for the perfect blah blah blah, look at the golden egg or something like that, I think that's when you stop becoming creative, because you believe that one idea is more precious than the other. My job is to come up with something new every day. I can always just make shit up. And if you treat it as something other than that, I think you're probably asking for something like writer's block or something like that to suddenly crop up and destroy your life. It's just one of those things where sometimes it's right to mash all that stuff together, and sometimes you get a beautiful pie or something like that.
with regards to the comics medium itself, I've always been curious as to your thoughts on this, but because, you know, there's a lot of people who are kind of slowly getting into the digital comics market. And I noticed that, the only digital comics from yours I see online is your Fantastic Four stuff for the Marvel app. Are there any plans for you to go digital with your creator owned work, or is there something that you're currently planning?
Of course, of course. But I can only release my catalog once.
Mm-hmm.
As a special event-like thing today for the first time ever. Jonathan's shitty books. so I'm not going to do it until I deem it to be a good time to do that, and now is certainly not that time. You know, we're nowhere. I'd like to think that we're closer than we are to having it right.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think so.
Is it just because of the interfaces with all the other apps, or is just is there anything in particular about that aspect of it that kind of
In particular, let's see what's wrong. The vast majority of the way that we read them, mm-hmm. the complexity of them, the price point is wrong. The viewing options are limited. The vertical information nature isn't there. In particular, I would say those are a few things that are wrong. I don't think we have it right. I don't know how else to say it. I think it's just never mind. I won't say that. I think we can do better. I believe that we will do better. How about that?
I remember, like, I was at HeroesCon a couple of years ago, and on the same topic, you kind of mentioned that you were looking into working with Longbox, Rance Hosley's app for computers, and there was talk of like doing like audio commentary, that sort of stuff included with
sure.
the comic, and I was wondering if that's still a go, or you're kind of rethinking that as well.
Well, Rance, Longbox in particular, mm-hmm. Had a lot more things right than wrong. I'm certainly still pulling for Rance mm-hmm. that he'll somehow be able to get to market in a way that is dynamic and, mm-hmm. and wonderful and all that. I don't know where he's at this month.
Mm-hmm.
I also made promises to him, which is another reason why I haven't released my books on the other mm-hmm. on the other side, and mm-hmm. I'd like to keep my word.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what's going on there. I certainly wish he was further along or had the had more momentum, but I don't have any more information on that.
Okay, that's understandable.
I think we're poor because his product didn't make it out. How about that?
Yeah, I tested his product for a while, and I always thought that was probably the best thing that I've ever played with as far as digital comics goes. And it's kind of a shame that it hasn't gotten out wide like it should have that time.
I don't know what else to say except that I wish it was would have been sooner and bigger and all that kind of stuff. So, but you know, it's digital. It's the that market moves at light speed. He could get funding from Microsoft or Apple tomorrow and be the primary app in the iTunes store, and he'll own the market and own a small island in the Caribbean in 2 years, and we'll love him for all his hookers. I don't know. who knows what the future holds, right? Rance is a friend, and I'm pulling for him. And if anybody deserves to win, he certainly does.
I agree with you there. He's a good guy.
Is computer readability something you've thought about with your past work? you know, if in terms of, you know, when it would later, you know, when the Jonathan Hickman shitty books collection gets put, you know, onto an app, you know, or an e-reader or something like that, is that something that you've kept in mind in the past? I mean, you're certainly going to do it in the future, but in the past with your other stuff, has that been somewhere your brain's gone?
Jonathan Hickman shitty books sounds a lot worse coming out of your mouth than mine.
I'm sorry. I don't mean it. It's certainly not. I think your book.
I need to rebrand immediately.
I'm glad I have to see.
Certainly. There's a whole second level to all of that Nightly News and Pax Romana stuff, the things that I wrote and drew, that I would like to roll out, that I may or may not ever be able to do. But yeah, all of that stuff was designed for a deeper experience.
Of course, we've touched upon most of your current work. Want to talk briefly about Secret Warriors and how it's about to end. And I have to say again how sad I am that it is ending. As far as the ending goes, Jonathan, was this something that you always planned on, at least like this point, at this point in time anyway, this number of issues, or were you going for longer originally?
Well, I mean, I originally pitched 60 issues, but I knew, you know, 4 or 5 issues in that was a probably an unobtainable goal, simply because, Pat, a lot of reasons. I mean, it 5 or 6 issues into Secret Warriors, I was already had the Fantastic Four gig, and we were talking about. We were talking about S.H.I.E.L.D. at that point. And so it became very clear very quickly that not only were bigger things isn't the right phrase to use, because Secret Warriors is very important to me. Tom Brevoort told it to me like this. He said, Jonathan, it is not my job to manage your career. It is your job to manage your career, because we will give you more work than you can handle. And so it is, we will use you up, in essence, is what he was saying. And so it is on you to manage that. And it became very apparent very quickly that, I was going to have a lot of opportunities and a lot of demands on my time. And I have a tendency to have a running 5-year plan in place. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm always adjusting it, but I have 1-year goals and 5-year goals I think that's healthy for anyone to do personally, but it became very apparent that if I wanted to do some of the things I wanted to do in my 5-year plan, I did not have 5 years to spend on Secret Warriors. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just didn't have it. And that felt like a right decision 5 issues into Secret Warriors. And now that we went 28 issues and 27 is coming out and 28, but obviously I'm finished. Half that time, 2.5 years was a difficult stretch at the end because of all the things that I had to be working on. So workload wise, I knew that I had to chop it. I also thought that we were going to have a difficult time with the number of readers that we were bleeding at making it to 60. Mm-hmm. Looking back at it now, the way our readership, even in a down market, I know I'm not supposed to say that, but whatever the right phrase is I'm supposed to use, in a stagnant market. I don't know what I'm supposed to say. I don't know what the correct cheerleading term is. We've stabilized. Secret Warriors is stabilized. I mean, we have a loyal readership that probably would have stuck with us for you know, another 15, 16, 17 issues. I mean, we would have gotten really close to 60. I mean, we would have gotten to the 50s pretty easily, I think. So what was a concern turned out to probably not be as legitimate of a concern, that we would have made it. You know, I read the whole thing the other day, and when I was I was wrapping it all up, and I'm satisfied. I think it's a good story. I think it's you know, for the first you know, long story that I've ever written, I think it works. I think it works, and I'm proud of it, and I think I achieved the goal that I set for myself at the outset, which was to tell and you know, a Twilight Years Nick Fury story, and I think we certainly did that.
Yeah, I honestly loved that book from the beginning, and I thought you had a really good handle on Fury. I like the fact that you had the long-term plan for it, and it really shows, because everything that you kind of seeded earlier in the book, it's coming to fruition right now. I mean, the last page, the last issue, I don't want to spoil it for anyone who hasn't read it yet, but that last page was just something that I was completely not expecting, but then I realized after reading everything that makes so much sense. So I really applaud you for your work on that book, and between your work there on Fantastic Four and FF, like, I like how you have these multi-year plans, and everything that you've seeded, you kind of, you know, you've taken care of, and you haven't left anything dangling for too long, and that's part of what I admire about your work. At this point, was there anything else that's coming up that you would like to kind of hint upon, like anything that you want people to look out for, in addition to the Red Wing and FF and S.H.I.E.L.D.? As well, as
I certainly hope that that people will check out Red Wing. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's only four issues. It's certainly worth the investment of your time, and it feels good to be doing those kind of books again. I've got another thing that I'm actually writing and drawing all of called Feel Better Now. It's that plus thing that I'm doing at Image, and that'll be. We'll probably formally announce that here a little bit further down the road with some art, and that's going to be a lot of fun. That's about a group of psychiatrists who screw with their patients, which is always good for hijinks. So that book will be really interesting and very entertaining, very dark, but very funny.
It sounds like a very fun book just based on the title. It's like, okay, is this some kind of comedy you're going for this time? It seems very different, but and then I see the psychiatrist thing, which is pretty hilarious.
It is the blackest of black comedies, man. I mean,
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah,
so, and you're drawing it too. Which is great.
Yeah, and I'm drawing it, and it's a really visually very, very interesting, probably the most interesting thing I've done. They're actually getting ready to announce a whole bunch of new stuff that I can't talk about yet, but I think you'll get a kick out of that. I'm appreciative that people are buying FF and that we're selling well, and, you know, it's nice that people are reading Fantastic Four again.
Yeah, and also, again, just to kind of intercede on FF, that last issue that came out this week, that cliffhanger at the end, was phenomenal. That was something completely out of left field.
That came out Wednesday. I forgot that FF2 came out. That's a fun book. Next issue is for all the people that have been reading all along. Oh my God, I think it takes place in 11 different places, and it's got probably 30 or 40 characters in it, but you know every single one of them, and it's like a high school reunion of comic book nerdness, man. That's pretty great. Mm-hmm. So,
man, I'm looking forward to that, man. You write great Doctor Doom, and you write great Namor, and all the Fantastic Four has been great, so... I appreciate that. And also, before we end, though, you mentioned Red Wing coming out later this year. Like, what month can we expect that to drop?
That comes out the first week of July. It's July 6th or July 7th, I think.
Okay, we'll be sure to note that. And we'll include a link to a solicit for the Red Wing on the show notes as well. And I'll include a link to a solicit for the the Red Wing in the notes for this episode, so people would know what it is or get the pre-order code and all that stuff, so that more people can check it out.
Cool.
And Adam, did you have any other questions for Jonathan before we go?
Yeah, just to wrap up, what's your favorite font?
Right now. Probably Universe right now is probably my favorite font that I'm using. I'm a big fan of that Gothic Narrow that I throw out. That's the Secret Warriors font and all the chapter breaks and Fantastic Four and all that kind of stuff. I love that font, but I'm using Universe and a bunch of stuff right now.
This is the second time we got. Last week we had Matt Fraction. Now his favorite font was Futura, and you have Universe. This is the font thing is becoming a regular occurrence here in this podcast.
Well, Matthew was wrong. It's Universe.
Well, once again, you can find Jonathan Hickman over at pronea.com. It's spelled PRONEA.com. And you can follow him on Twitter at twitter.com/jhickman. Again, Jonathan, thank you very much for coming on board. And I appreciate you making the time for us, man. It's been a great conversation.
Yeah, anytime, Pat. Anytime.
Yes, take care, and best of luck with all of your work.
Cool.
All right. And that was a rather good conversation we just had with John Hickman. What do you think of that, Adam? What do you think of his thoughts on everything?
I think we didn't ask him enough about ice cream.
I don't know, man. Ice cream doesn't seem like his type of thing. He coming from where he is, I should ask questions about barbecue since it's in the Carolinas. that's their thing over there, you know, barbecue.
Absolutely.
That was a serious error on our parts. But seriously, I thought it was a very fascinating conversation, particularly about design and comics and publications. And it was really cool of him to kind of let us in on his next one of his newer projects.
That was a Leukomania exclusive,
yes.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, feel better now from Image later this year.
The darkest of dark comedies.
I look forward to it because I don't think I've seen enough Hickman comedy out there, but we kind of caught a glimpse of that here on the show. And I think that should be it for this, at least for a while. We will have more creator interviews over the next few months. Not next week, unfortunately. Next week you just have to deal with us regular folks. But I will be talking a bit about Wizworld Anaheim next week, which I will be visiting for a little bit. And I will be talking about some comics as well. It's been a while since I talked comics, so we'll do that. And Adam, where can people find you on the internet?
It's twitter.com/ADAMWITT. My profile set to private, but feel free to send a request.
Okay, and of course I am in all my usual spots. You go to patloika.com for my personal blog and my photo blogging. Go to comicbooknoise.com/loikamania for the podcast official site/blog for reviews on movies, comics, and other stuff that I'm into. And of course you can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/patloika. I am followed by a lot of really cool people, and you should too. So thank you all for listening. Hope you guys enjoyed our interviews. Like last week with Matt Fraction, which was a fantastic show, and of course this week with John Hickman. We will have more guests soon. I can't really mention who, but when it's time, you will know, and hopefully you will enjoy what we have to share with you. So until next week, you guys take care, and be nice and leave us some reviews on iTunes, too, because that would be really cool. All right, take care, and take it easy.